So, hello everyone. How's everyone doing? Thank you for joining us today in this Windows Phone Design Day, part of the larger Windows Phone Dev Camp here in the Nokia offices. And my name is Arturo Toledo. I am a UX designer in the Windows Phone Design Studio. And here with me is that, I think. I don't know if we need more new batteries or something. But Jared is here. So Jared has been in the team for a while, for more than 2 years, 3 years now. I'm actually much newer to the team, so I'm very happy to have Jared with me today. He's going to be able to share with us a lot of stories and a lot of kind of in-depth things that have been happening in the studio all this time and things that helped Microsoft to craft Windows Phone from scratch. Today, I want to share with you our Twitter aliases. Now, the first person you see there, not Jared, Rina Black, and I'm just going to speak loud until they replace this. Karina has been doing the tour with me, the design tour, and so we have her there. But it really is Jared Potter, if you want to follow him and myself in Twitter. Today, send us comments, send us questions, and after the event as well, feel free to contact us if you want to, if you want any resource or you need any type of support when it comes to Windows Phone design. Now, I want to start the event by showing you a video to start setting up the mood of what it means and what it is Metro for Windows Phone. Start. Well, let's talk first about the agenda before that. The timings that you have on the screen will be a little different, but we have five sessions. The first Metro, and the Metro session, we're going to go in depth into learning more about the design language that has given shape to Windows Phone. We're going to go deep into learning where it comes from and how we can use it to design Windows Phone applications. Then we're going to go into a think session. Think is about design thinking and coming up with good ideas for apps, ideation techniques, brainstorming techniques that we want to share with you so that you can come up with original and unique ideas for creating apps. Then we're going to jump into a design session. We're going to construct a Windows Phone application, a golf application, and we're going to learn a lot of things about Metro and how we put all these principles of Metro in practice. And with Jared, we're going to go into Refine. The Refine session is basically a best practices session. After having learned more about Metro and having put that into practice in design, Jared is going to share with us some best practices to better design Windows Phone apps and take them to the next level. And at the end, we're going to have a build session where Jared is also going to delight us by prototyping end-to-end of an application using Expression Blend. So let's get started right away, and let me play you guys this video. Let's hope the audio is working well. Let's see. This seems fine. It's plugged in. Is there technical support? Nope. Up. Oh my god. Are they going up or down now? I don't know. Oh my god. That's weird. Oh well. Let's see if that works. Nope. That's too dark. Is there anyone from Microsoft here who could help us get some technical support? Thank you, if you don't mind. This should be much easier, but oh well. In the meantime, let me just get started with the Metro session. And I'll play that video to you in a moment. So let's talk about Metro. These are the three things I want to share with you today. I want to talk about the inspiration of Metro, where it comes from, what made Microsoft design it the way it's designed, and how we are exposing it for you guys to design Windows Phone apps. Then we're going to take a look at the Metro principles, where it comes from, and then we're going to learn more about the Metro design language. Now, the difference between the principles and the language is that the principles are the building blocks or the big pillars that allow us to understand the basic concepts of Metro, and the design language are what I would describe as the Lego pieces that you can mix to put together a Windows Phone application. So I need a little bit of help. All right. Yeah. Oh, quickly. Yeah. So, audio out.
Yeah.
Beta
2. What is this? Mm-hmm. On the data 2?
Yeah. Because there's audio coming from there.
I think actually it's on this is on the data one. But what happens if we go? Oh yeah. I think it happened.
Okay, perfect. Okay, now we have a video. Thank you. Oh, and the blinds is the other thing. I think we wind them up, right? Otherwise, everyone's going to sleep. Sorry about that, guys, but I think we're set. Okay. So, as I was saying, principles are basically the big pillars that define the design language that we will then use to design Windows Phone applications. The design language are the components or the building blocks that we use to design an app. So let me go ahead and play this video for you to start setting up the mood of what is Metro and how it looks like inside of Windows Phone. Okay, so this video is really good to start showing us a little bit of some of those very particular aspects of Metro and what it makes it unique as a design language. And so let's talk more about it and let's go deeper into it. At any point, feel free to point out if you have any questions or comments. So this is the direction that Microsoft was going to take with Windows Mobile 7. A few years ago. As you can see, it's very different from what we know today as Windows Phone. We had a different direction, different look and feel. And back then, that's when Microsoft, you know, we said, hey, stop the press. Let's rethink what a phone should be like and how a smartphone should be designed. And Microsoft went ahead and built something completely from scratch. Back then, that's when Albert Schum joined the studio. And Albert had been working for Nike for more than 10 years, had a lot of experience designing consumer experiences. And he also has a couple business degrees, which means he's basically the director of the studio. He is the type of designer that understands design, but can also translate those ideas into things that can be accessible globally for people from different backgrounds. So along with Albert, other talented designers in Microsoft, including Jared here, of course, but other people like Jay Park and Jeff Fong, for example, these guys were already working for Microsoft, exploring some of those early concepts that we now know as Metro. And they were participating and designing other products in Microsoft, like Windows Media Center, which I'm sure many of you have seen before. Notice how here in Windows Media Center, some of these early explorations of what we now know as Metro were starting to take shape. Very simple navigation mechanism, super simple horizontal and vertical axis, which would give shape to this user interface. The use of typography to convey structured information and navigation. Very clean backgrounds and the exposure of very clean images. Here's another example, also Windows Media Center. Here we can see how the images from the albums of the artists are very clean. They don't have any borders or any drop shadows or any highlights. It's super clean. You can also start to see up here a little bit of what now we know as a pivot control in Windows Phone, but this was starting to be explored back then as well. Also, the use of the grid to compose a user interface is something that Microsoft had never done in the past. Here's another example, the Zoom client. Another great example of the use of grid to compose a user interface. Great use of typography, again, to convey structured information. Our natural tendency when doing design of any other style would be to make all of this text, and perhaps even this text, use the same font and the same size. However, in Metro, typography allows us to convey structured information, and so we start taking these decisions of which pieces of text are more important than the others or more significant than others, and then we make those bigger, literally. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. Notice also the use of very clean images, as the one we've mentioned before. And then we also had Zoom HD, the Zoom device. And so some of these designers in Microsoft also took the advantage of this device to start exploring a lot of these Metro concepts in a small screen. The use of touch as an interaction mechanism and the use of transitions and motions in a small screen. So with all of this experience from this team of designers, this is a photo of some of our design leads in the studio and many other designers that we have in the team. We have more than 60 designers, and we have fun sometimes outside of the studio as well, as you can see there. And, well, all these people were tasked with creating a smartphone from scratch. That was a big challenge for Microsoft, right? Rethinking the phone from scratch. However, the interesting thing here about designing a phone from scratch, if you think about it, is that today, what we know as a phone, the smartphone, it really represents the convergence of a huge number of technologies, from GPS to maps and SMS and certainly phone and internet, and everything converges together into a small little screen, right? So the way we decided to address this challenge was by creating this thing we call the Metro Design Language. Now, Metro is made out of two things. First, we have the design principles, the Metro Design Principles. And then on top of that, we have the design language, the Metro Design Language. Again, the design principles are the big pillars that give shape to Metro. And the design language are the building blocks, or like, as I described them before, the Lego pieces that you use to compose your user interface. So let me start talking first about the design principles. Because if we understand those basic pillars, then we can all agree on the direction for how we can design Windows Phone applications. Now, design principles. What are design principles? Design principles describe fundamental ideas about the practice of good design. These ideas are assumed to be the basis of all intentional design strategies. What this means in a nutshell, again, is that when we all here in the design studio in Redmond, and all of you, we see you guys as an extension of Studio H. We're in Studio H, the building Studio H in Redmond. We see you guys as an extension of the studio. When we all agree on these pillars and these principles, we think we can create a unified experience in the phone. Even though everyone in the room will be designing different phone applications, we want to feel as a unified experience. Now, a design language is an overarching scheme or style that guides the creation of a common, that's again the key word here, a common set of experiences and user interfaces. Again, the design language is what unifies all of us into having and speaking the same type of concepts, the same type of design language that will be part of a Windows Phone experience. Now, this is the way that Windows Phone looks like. Do we have a lot too much light, perhaps? A little bit, right? So after all, we do want the blinds down. Because yes, it's a little bright. Now, by the way, if you see me drinking a lot of Red Bull today, I'm an addict to Red Bull. Literally, last night for me, I was running a half marathon in Las Vegas, and I just landed a couple hours ago. So I need some Red Bull today. But please bear with me. So this is the way now that Windows Phone looks like. As you can see, it's very different from that first image that I showed you, right? Let's take a look at some of the design aspects here, something that we can start taking away with us as designers or developers. Notice here in the start screen for Windows Phone, again, the use of typography to convey structured information. Our natural tendency would be to make all of this text the same size. But in Metro, we ask ourselves, when we have a range of information, certain information, we ask ourselves, what's the most important piece of information here? In this case, it's the date. So we make that much bigger, literally. This is less important, so we make this a little smaller. And this is kind of third tier of importance, and so we even show this with little icons. So you can see how we use typography with different sizes, and as simple as that, we start conveying information. Notice also the use of images, very clean. No drop shadows, no borders, no adorners, only what's needed to convey the concept that we're trying to communicate to people. The use of iconography, also minimalistic. We're going to talk much more about iconography later in the session. And again, just very clean approach to conveying some of these concepts. Now, when people ask us a lot, where does Metro come from? Where did we get the inspiration to create Metro? We usually say, well, Metro comes from our inspiration in transportation graphics and urban signage. But where do those graphics, in turn, come from? And they come from a design style called the International Typographic Style or the Swiss Style. Now, the International Typographic Style has its origins back in the early 20th century in a design school, design and architecture school called the Bauhaus, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. The Bauhaus explored a number of different things in architecture and design, but the key flag or the key slogan that they would be, kind of carrying all around the world was one very simple thing. It was fierce reduction of elements. Fierce reduction of elements. And the thing is that if you think about it, for many centuries, humans have been designing buildings with a lot of ornaments and adorners, right? We would always see like these columns with flowers going around the columns and maybe little angels carrying the ceilings. And for many centuries, for different social, economical, and religious reasons, you know, we've had that type of design. But in the earlier 20th century, also for different economical and social reasons, and technological reasons, people were moving more into a more rational approach to design. And so Bauhaus claimed fierce elements only use what's truly needed. Now, in the 1950s, after World War, this style continued to mature even more. After the Second World War, as we know, there were a lot of people that were moving all over the world. A lot of people from Europe going into America, a lot of people from Asia going into Europe, and America into Europe as well, like all over the place. And this concept of globalization and having people being part of larger cities started becoming a much bigger challenge for governments and institutions. So governments and institutions had the need to use a design style that was neutral, that was global, and that could talk to people from all sorts of different backgrounds. People at the same time were being bombarded and, well, more and more information, and they wanted to make decisions. Now, this design basically expressed itself in printed media. Things like transportation graphics and urban signage, books, magazines, posters. It was mostly printed media. Here are some more examples of this design style. And you can see how it doesn't matter whether you are in Tokyo or you are in New York or certainly here in Copenhagen. I immediately noticed in the airport, everywhere around here is like so metro, so cool. You can see this happens just all around the world. It's an international style, an international style that is neutral and that is understood by a lot of people. Now, take a look at the iconography here. Also clean and minimalistic. The taxi cab, right? In this type of design style, we don't use textures. We usually don't use things like 3D. Why don't we use like other things like colors? Well, because, you know, if you're trying to talk to people from different backgrounds and different countries, you know, taxis are usually painted in different colors in different countries, right? In some places they're red, others they're yellow or blue. So if we start using colors or textures or a lot of detail, then it starts becoming harder for people to understand that that's really just a taxi. So we need to abstract that concept. And we drive a lot of this design style based on that. Also notice that the typographic style here. This is a sans serif font. And sans serif fonts are usually kind of the rock stars here in this type of design style. Notice that this type of font, sans serif, which means no ornaments, and certainly we can see here there are no ornaments, there are no curls or any other type of adorner. All other iconography, very, very clear. Here are a few more examples of how this design style expressed itself as information graphics. This is some of the work from Massimo Vignelli. He's one of the most well-recognized designers on this particular design style. He's based in the United States. This design style grew and was born here in Europe. Massimo Vignelli was probably one of the designers who took this design style into the U.S. and made it very popular over there as well. He has done a lot of work for the New York City and other cities in the U.S. Notice, again, very clean use of typography, very geometrical approach to conveying design. You will notice also that subway and metro maps all around the world, they kind of feel similar, right? Whether you're in the London Underground or the Tokyo subway, Manhattan, they are all about conveying information. And one very important thing in this design style is that aesthetics and beauty are driven by the understanding of information and by the ability of designers to convey that information in a way that makes sense. So aesthetics and beauty are not there just for the sake of beauty and aesthetics. They make sense because of the information architecture. Here are a few more examples. The grid as a composition element is very important to this design style. And as we will learn a little later, Windows Phone also has a grid that we are sharing with you and that you guys can use to design your Windows Phone applications. The grid is a very important mechanism for composing user interfaces. It will help you have balance and alignment and order in your user interface. Here, this is another example of this design style. These are the Munich 1972 Olympics branding. Again, very clean use of typography. I always point out to the dog here, right? So the dog is kind of an organic creature, right? But here it's been abstracted into very clean horizontal and vertical axis of composition, flat colors. And again, I think the design style just speaks by itself. The use of iconography, the Olympics are probably a great example of an event that has the need to talk to people from all sorts of different backgrounds. So the iconography here has to be very abstract and minimalistic to communicate only what's needed. In this particular case, the activities or the sports. Here are a few more examples of iconography that's used in this design style. And the Olympics logo, the Olympics committee logo, if you think about it, this is actually a great example of this design style. In another design style, we would have probably had an image, a world, or map, and we could have had people hugging each other, right? Maybe laughing or something. But instead of that, in this design style, we go for something much more geometrical and abstract that communicates the same concept. Simply five geometrical rings interconnected, communicating the five continents. American Airlines logo is a very iconic example of this design style. It's the only logo from an airline that hasn't changed since it was created. Great use of Helvetica. And let's talk a little bit about Helvetica, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with or have used before, have heard about before. In this particular design style, Helvetica has definitely been the rock star, right? It has been the star of the show when it comes to typography. It is important to say, however, that Helvetica is not the only family or font family that can be used as part of this design style. In general, any sans-serif font can be used just as well. But Helvetica has definitely been more broadly embraced and adored by many people around the world. And in fact, it's been so adored by a lot of people that someone thought it would be a good idea to create a movie around Helvetica. Have you guys seen that movie? Some of you? Yeah. I highly recommend you guys watch that movie. It's a documentary. I would call it reference material. I wouldn't even say it's one of those things that you see once. If you're into Windows Phone design and Metro, it's really good reference material. It has a lot of design that are giving great practical tips on how to approach and understand this particular design style. So let me play for you an extract of this movie, just a 2-minute extract, so that you can see the passion of one of these designers that are into this design style, and you can, you know, you will see definitely how that concept of fierce reduction of elements is put into practice.
This is after Helvetica was in full swing, same product, no people, no smiling fakery, just a beautiful big glass of ice cold Coke. The slogan underneath, it's the real thing, period. Coke, period. In Helvetica, period. Any questions? Of course not. Drink Coke, period. Simple.
This video is just amazing because it's a great documentary. It just clearly shows you, right, the passion and like the clear understanding that designers that follow this design style have for abstracting only what's needed and really only showing and presenting to users or to viewers only the information that's needed. So it's a great video. Here's a link to the Helvetica film. Again, highly recommended as a reference material for you guys. So this is the international typographic style that we've been talking about. Now, the international typographic is a very particular design style that has no expiration date. And it has no expiration date because it's based on universal and global principles. It feels timeless because of that, and we think it will always feel modern. And in fact, even today, some top brands around the world and, you know, even some movie posters use this design style because it's just to evolve and continues to give room for designers to be creative. Here, for instance, we have the poster of Little Miss Sunshine, the movie. Have you guys seen that movie? It's a very fun. If you have seen the movie, you will recognize this photo. It's a great shot that clearly illustrates what the movie is all about. It's a family running and chasing each other all over the place in a road trip. That's what the movie is all about. So here the photo communicates a lot. Notice the use of white space. Of course, in this case, it's yellow, but it's white space. It's empty space, which in this design style, it's very important. Our natural tendency, again, when we design, is that we're given space, and then we feel like we have to fill it up with things. But we don't necessarily have to fill all the space with things. In fact, here, the fact that all this space is empty, was left empty on purpose, simply emphasizes the action even more. So white space or empty space is your friend, and you will find a lot of that in Windows Phone as well. We use that to our advantage to emphasize interaction points on different screens. Here's another example from American Apparel, a popular store in the US. Very clean use of photo, simply the model communicating what American Apparel offers. Very clean background, and just a very simple call to action also there in Helvetica. Here we have this kind of an interesting example as well, Crate and Barrel. Now notice here, these are boxes, and notice how the words are wrapping around the box, and so they're kind of cutting out, right? That concept is very much used in this design style to convey continuum or continuity in visual space. And we use this concept a lot in Windows Phone as well. I'm sure you've seen how sometimes we kind of cut words or something like that. Or even icons or other elements. We do that to convey to the user that there is the sense of continuity. If you have a Windows Phone or you've played with a Windows Phone before, I'm sure you've probably felt that you had that feeling that you're dealing, when you're using Windows Phone, you're dealing with a canvas that is bigger than the screen itself. And we sell that feeling to the user by doing these types of things, like cutting out some elements that invites the user to explore what comes next. LeBron James, for example, he's a very popular basketball player in the US. We don't need a basketball here. We don't even need a photo of LeBron James because his name is so popular, that's all that's needed. So in this design style, that's all that we show. An example of an advertisement from North Face, the clothing company. And so here, one of the things that I always point out to is the logo. Notice how the logo is so small. I'm sure that we all in the room, we've talked to clients who get back to us and they ask us, hey, please make my logo bigger, right? But instead here, we have a very elegant, small logo. The brand is obviously recognized. And instead of that, we have a big photo that sells the concept of what North Face is trying to solve. In this case, they're offering great products for winter sports or mountain hiking, etc. Now, also notice one thing here, the bleeding out of the photo. So we're cutting out the photo on the edges. And again, that just shows once more this concept of continuity, the fact that we're cutting the photo here kind of sells or gives the impression to the viewer that the image is larger than the canvas itself. And we play with that type of design ingredient or technique a lot in Windows Phone as well, to sell the idea that we're dealing with a canvas that is larger than the screen itself. That is a very particular detail in Windows Phone. Now, as we've said, all this international typographic style has expressed itself mostly in printed media. But now we're on the digital age, right? We've been on the digital age for, I guess, only 30 years, or 30 years, which is probably a lot in digital age terms. So the question here is, how do we express these principles, these design principles, in the digital age? And the big difference now is that information is now digital. And that drives a huge difference in how we can express all these design concepts. When information is digital, information becomes more personal, more relevant, and more connected. And that's something we call red threads in the design studio. These red threads drive a lot of the design decisions and user experience decisions that the studio takes to design the features that are included in the next version of Windows Phone, from the first one to Mango to the next one that we're working on. Let me give you an example of what digital information allows you to do, and I'm sure this is nothing new for any of us here in this room in particular, but we're walking on the street and we're presented with printed media, with this message, and you're passing by and you will receive this message, even if the message is not relevant to you. Maybe you don't even care about this station, but the message will be provided to you. And so it might not be as relevant, but when you have a digital media, right, digital media and digital information can be tailored much more specifically at yourself. And that's probably why a lot of people, and including myself, I'm sure many of you, we find ourselves just immersed in this little screen, right? Because it just communicates with us, it communicates to us so much information that it's just super immersive and offers just a great opportunity to get personalized information and stay connected with other people. Now, so from the international typographic style principles, information as the king, fierce reduction of elements, typography, and being global, we have the metro principles, content, not Chrome. We just call it content or information. It's the same thing, not Chrome. Now, Chrome are all these things like ornaments and adorners, fierce reduction of elements, typography, being global. And we have two new principles, which are motion, because now in the digital world we can have motion, and being authentically digital. Now, Jared, you want to say something?
Me?
Yes.
Traditionally at Microsoft, there were project managers that worked on every product, and what they did was bring new features to everything. So they would, like, we'd be working on the phone. And they would come up with all these ideas for new features. Well, when we were working on Windows Phone 7, one of the principles was fierce reduction of elements. And so they were constantly adding features to every single screen. And we had a lot of the project managers actually change their title to fierce reducer, which meant they would go through screens and we'd have designs and they'd say, oh, you could add this button, this button, this button. Instead, we'd have them go through screens with tons of buttons and pull out the ones that we didn't think that were necessary. So actually, my manager still, his title is Fierce Reducer in the design studio. So
that was the impression that I got when I first joined the team and I saw people like Jared. I was like, wow, like these guys ask more frequently, what should I take out versus what should I put in, which is, I think it just has delivered, or that's what has made Windows Phone be a very well-focused product. So authentically digital. That's something that the first time that I heard authentically digital, it sounded to me kind of like a marketing type of statement, and I was like, that's too marketing. But then I finally got it, and I understood it thanks to Jeff Fong. He's one of the senior interaction leads in the studio, and he describes being authentically digital as being honest with the fact that we're designing for a digital media, a digital media that's made out of pixels, that's flat, that's a small screen of a specific size, right? And if you think about it, you know, there are a couple different approaches to designing user interfaces, and including the one that we were headed to with Windows Mobile 7 back in the day, and even before that, right? So there is this concept of being iconographic or being infographic, two different approaches to achieve user interface design. And I'm not going to say one is better than the other. They're simply different in their essence and the way that they achieve results. In Windows Phone, we like to say we're infographic. We care about bringing information to the forefront and make that the most important thing in the user interface. And the Chrome and the user interface elements go to the background. I will give you an example in terms of iconographic, right? The iconographic approach means taking metaphors from the real world and translating those into a digital experience. So if I have a phone, I will make a phone look like a phone, right? Or if I have a, something like a calendar, I might actually have something that looks like a calendar with paper and everything else. But in the iconographic type of system or approach, it's just a different approach. And it means, again, recreating aspects or concepts from the real world into the digital world. So again, in Windows Phone, we prefer to go infographic, and I'm going to show you more a little bit of how we can do that throughout the session. So these were the design principles for Metro, and let me just make sure we're still on time because I want to give you guys enough breaks. I think we're still on time. Make sure. Yes, perfect. So let's start talking now about the design language. So quick summary of the design principles, right? The design principles we learned where they come from the international typographic style, and how they've been enhanced by the digital age, of course. Now we have things like motion and being authentically digital. Now let's take a look at the building blocks that we can use to design Windows Phone applications on top of the principles. So on the left side of your screen, we have the design principles for Metro, and on the right side of the screen, we have the design language for Metro. Now, the Metro design language is made out of like different categories of things. We have things from things like navigation and layout, composition, typography, motion, iconography, etc. We even get to things like gestures and touch targets. So Metro is not only about how things look, but also how people will interact with those things on the screen. The hardware itself of Windows Phone, the fact that we have a back button and a start screen button and all these other elements that we have on the hardware, they are predefined, and every manufacturer will have those same hardware buttons, and they are part of the Metro design language as well. And of course, user interface controls, things like buttons and sliders and checkboxes, all those things make up the Metro design language. So let's talk a little bit about Metro design language, and I will start by talking about navigation, layout, and composition. In Windows Phone, we have a navigation mechanism called hub and spoke, and the hub and spoke navigation mechanism is a very simple system that is very much used in cities or large urban areas, including an example would be airports. Airports use this type of system a lot. And it's basically a way that optimizes and reduces the distance from point A to point B. Everything around this particular navigation model surrounds this concept of reducing the distance from point A to B. So in Windows Phone, the way that we use it is you would basically get into your application, and the user would go to page 1, make a decision, go to page 2, make another decision, go to page 3. And if the user wants to go back, they go back to page 2, page 1, and the beginning of the application. So it's a very linear flow within the application. Once you go into your application, we don't start branching out in like a tree-like structure, or we don't have things like loops or anything like that, which is very common in other user interaction mechanisms or systems out there. In ours, we really like to be much more linear, and we think that ends up offering users a very predictable path forward and backward. And we'll learn more about how we can implement some of this. Here's just a quick example, right? So you would land in your main application hub, and then from there, you can select perhaps another option that would take you to a pivot control or a panorama control. We're going to learn much more about those two in a moment. Let's talk about page structuring Windows Phone. This is a generic page structuring Windows Phone, just so we all get an idea of the basic elements in designing a Windows Phone app. At the top, we have a 32-pixel area called the status bar. Now, the status bar will show basic things like the time, like how much battery left you have, are you connected to Wi-Fi or to 3G, these types of things that are static and predefined. As a design consideration, try not to have anything that's critical for your application to work up there in this, within these 32 pixels, because it could be blocked or it could be overlapping with this status bar if the status bar comes down. Now, it's only 32 pixels, so you won't really have a big problem there, but just something to consider. Then we have the application space, and we're going to talk much more about the different things that we can put in the application space itself. And then we have the application bar. The application bar is one of the most common controls in Windows Phone. A way to understand the application bar is think of it as the main menu of your application. It's that one thing that will have that will be persistent throughout different pages or different screens for your user, and will allow you to give the user access to functions for your application. It's usually not used as a navigation mechanism. That's a common mistake we see in applications. The application bar is not necessarily a navigation mechanism. It's more of a way for you guys to expose functions to users. Now, we'll talk much more about application bar. The other concept that I've been mentioning a lot already, and I think it's important for all of us as designers and developers to understand and to then leverage, is that in Windows Phone, the canvas extends beyond the screen limits. Again, if you have a Windows Phone or you play with a Windows Phone, the feeling that you're dealing, like you're moving, that's kind of out here in the air, is very common, and it's very particular of Windows Phone. I remember that was the first thing that made me feel kind of immersed in the experience. And the thing is, we just do a lot of visual kind of tricks and techniques to sell this concept to users. And all of these things are, of course, available for you guys as well. This, for instance, is a panorama control. And the panorama control is a very cool control. We'll talk much more about it. But in a nutshell, the panorama control is a full spread of design that literally extends beyond the screen limits and that has different things like cutting out certain portions of it to sell the user the fact that there is continuity and there's additional elements here. Now, let's talk about the grid. I mentioned that the grid was a super important composition element in the international typographic style. Well, in Windows Phone, we have a grid as well that we use to design everything that comes out of the box in Windows Phone. And this grid is available for you too. I will share a link where you can download the grid in different formats, in Photoshop, for expression, a grid that's ready to go for Expression Blend, etc., etc. And you guys can use this grid. Now, this grid is 24 pixels, 25, 12, 25, 12, 25, etc., etc. This grid is very flexible. You can see here how we identify some of the cells that are part of the grid. Here we can see some columns. So if you were creating an application for East Asian markets, for example, you can see how some of the characters would start lining up here in the columns or in the rows. Again, it's a very flexible grid. Gives you room for two-column layout, three-column layouts, four, etc. And here we have some actual examples that show how the start screen in Windows Phone, for instance, matches the grid nicely. You can see here how we match these different cells, and everything aligns perfectly. These, which are the smaller icon tiles that get you access to the applications as well, they're, of course, much smaller, but they match the grid. Here's another example. Here it's very clear how the pivot headers up here match a couple of those cells. Okay, again, we leverage the grid as much as possible. And it's one of those things that are out there, but we haven't been talking a lot about it, and we think this will really help you guys start laying out your user interface elements. Orientation. Orientation is another interesting topic here. We normally think of orientation as being something just simple, right? It's portrait and landscape, period. But there's actually much more into it. We have portrait and landscape, but when it comes to landscape, we actually have left landscape or right landscape. And up until a few weeks ago, I was still looking for an example to show how that worked. And if you have a Windows Phone and you want to open the calculator actually has different modes. It has a scientific calculator and an accounting calculator, whether it's rotated left, so left landscape, or right landscape. So the application changes its functionality by simply rotating your phone. Now, that is a very interesting concept that we will review in the design session a little later today. The design decision that when we rotate the phone, we do not always have to relay out or reaccommodate elements so that they look nice in landscape. Instead, we can ask ourselves, what could we use landscape for that would make sense? We'll learn much more about that in the next session. Typography. So typography, we've been talking about Helvetica, but let's now talk about Sego. So Sego is the font family that we provide you guys in Windows Phone so that you can design applications. It is not the only font that you can use. You can use any other font that you like. Highly recommended that you use sans serif fonts. So if you like Helvetica, for example, you know, you could license Helvetica and you could deploy and distribute an application using Helvetica. You can use any font that you like. But Sego is the one that we provide out of the box, and you know, we think it will give you a broad range of different scenarios that you can satisfy with these different weights that we're including. So we have Sego Light, Semi-Light, Sego Normal, Semi-Bold, Bold, and Black. And this will give you this, and playing with different sizes will give you a huge range of possibilities. Here's with dark background as well. These fonts are included in the Windows Phone SDK. This is a typical question that we get. What's the minimum text size, the minimum readable text size in Windows Phone? 13 pixels. Now, that doesn't mean that we should use 13 pixels for all of our text so that we have more text in the screen. It's just that's the smallest text that would be readable by the user. Let's talk now about motion. So when it comes to motion, we have a dictionary of different motions or animations that we use to convey information or to highlight function. The way and the reason we use motion and animation in Windows Phone is not just to make it kind of pretty or cool, but it's to emphasize function. So for example, this motion called turnstile. Turnstile is a kind of a more aggressive animation or motion that sells the concept to the user that we're taking them from one context in Windows Phone to a completely different context. In this case, we're taking the user from the start screen into a completely different context and application, which is the email application. So you can see this type of design, this motion sells that concept. Now here's another one called continuum. Now continuum would be kind of the opposite of turnstile. In continuum, we want to sell the idea that we are about to present new information to the user, but we're going to leave them within the same context. So here we're in our email application, and we present new data or new information, which is the email itself. But notice this is a more kind of gentle animation that sells the idea that we are still staying within context. Then we have Swivel. Swivel is we would use for transient UIs or user interface elements that are just going to show up and then fade out, waiting for user input. In this case, we are just waiting for the user to confirm, hit OK. It could be perhaps save or cancel, or you know, the user could be taking any action, and then that element will rotate back and disappear. Then we have Slide. And Slide is used basically to communicate dead-end scenarios. Basically, when you've reached the most, kind of the end of an application or a branch in your application, there's no more to go into. That's when you want to use a slide application. It just kind of sells that concept much more visually speaking. And of course, you can create custom motion and custom animations if you want. Here are some examples of the feel that that would be used in a metro motion. Notice the use of a lot of, we kind of rely a lot on is in and is out. If you're familiar with doing animation in 3D Studio Max or Flash, even Expression Blend, all these will feel very familiar to you as a designer. Is out, it's very common. We don't really use things like bouncing effects or things like that unless it makes sense to you for a particular function or reason. Notice down here this tile that just rotated there. Let me play that again for you. This tile that's going to rotate. You notice that? So even though we do not have 3D in Windows Phone, notice how some of those elements that are flat, that look like they're flat and in 2D, we actually do treat them as 3D planes. Right? So a 3D plane that can rotate. So it's not a cube, but it's a plane that just rotated again there. That's another way of understanding metro animation and the metro composition, where even though, again, we don't have 3D, we do have, this concept of depth of layers and these planes that can rotate. Okay, so let's take a break. I believe we have we're giving a 15-minute break. So let's take a 15-minute break, and we'll come back to finalize this session and just continue to go with the next few sessions. So I'll see you guys in 15 minutes. Feel free to come down here if you have any questions or comments. Thank you.